This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Yes, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show.
Good morning.
You didn't tell her that not to talk. I said just tell her don't say anything.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I'm sitting here with one of my guests, Miss Yvonne Johnson from over at Kaneohe, and we're going to be talking about several things, but as you know, there's the expansion of the runway and all of the activities at Kaneohe Marine Base. And I've had a number of queries asking for assistance on this, as well as people wanting to come on the show. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. Somehow, there's some kind of element out there that causes people to when they work for the government, or not just the government, but I see it more prevalent and it's more pronounced in that the fear of retaliation, even civilians. The concern here is loud noises from the jets and the planes and the military activity. So I don't know how many are going to dare call in. Apparently, there is a sentiment that if you speak out for your civil rights or ask the military to take the foot off your throat or whatever, it's an invitation to be accused of being anti-American and anti-military and not wanting to support the troops. But you can support the troops without being poisoned, maimed, deafened, or all sickened by the military preparation to go to war. So anyway, those of you that want to call in or got the guts or the gonads, feel free, and 524-1080 is the number, and maybe we can bring some justice to this issue. And I'll remind you that when we talk about this, you're going to hear some things that even for me is frightening. We're going to talk a little bit about the Camp Lejeune water problem, which is Marine Corps and on the mainland. We're also just reminding you that, remember, this is the same base that had a helicopter to crash and didn't disclose that there were radiation aboard the vessels when they did crash. So that had to come out later. And again, even the disclosure of that resulted in a great many people who did come forward being threatened and with being fired or threatened to be fired. And there was a manhunt of sort looking for the snitch or the rat who would have come to me and shared that so the public would know what would really happen. Then you know that I've talked also about the chlordane and the contaminant soils at Kaneohe Marine Base, that for somehow the environmental action levels were set. These numbers were exceeded by the amount of chlordane, dildrin, aldrin, and those constituents or contaminants. And yet the state government helped them cover it up. So imagine. Then we just had the LCACs, the hovercrafts, that were out there on the sandbar. And again, they claim, in fact, if you unfold, they said that the PIO officer initially told the media, we don't have any LCACs out there. They're not on the sandbar. Then it came back, well, no, there's two. No, there's one. Then finally they acknowledged that there were three. So this is the kinds of people that you're dealing with. But guess what? You are civilians, and also not just civilians, the active duty military people and the civilians that work on there are impacted. So anyway, we're going to talk about that, and I also have a participant from England on the line now. She's going to join in, and others. So 524-1080 is the number, and good morning, Yvonne. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, yes. Hi.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this situation.
Well, I've actually lived in Kaneohe in my current house we own since 1994, and there was some aircraft noise, but nothing that ever really got to me until, you know, the surge for a rock. And I think that's when McCain, you know, and I love him, you know, God bless America. But, you know, with that surge came an unbelievable international airport in my backyard. I can no longer sit on my lanai and enjoy my view. I can no longer talk on the phone to anyone. I can no longer hear my television at a decent volume, because if I do, it flies over, I miss it. They do a continuous touch-and-go pattern. Sometimes I've seen four of the C-17s, those big cargo things that come in from Hickam, in my backyard. And like every 3 minutes, there's something over the top of my house. Now they go, we don't fly on your roof. Well, you know, I said, excuse me, I can read the numbers, so you must be on my roof. I've seen the Coast Guard, I've seen the Navy, I've seen the Army, I've seen, you know, tons of different aircraft. And so I've got a couple of letters here because I wrote one back in 2007. Now, I'd like to say, you know, I'm a military family member. I was in the reserves back in 79. My husband has been to Iraq. It's not that I'm anti-military, but I am anti, you know, if you're going to hurt and damage my health, because when you brought up the Camp Lejeune drinking water, I was there as well. I've had four heart procedures. I've had open heart surgery. I've had radiation done to me. My children have heart palpitations. I've had congestive heart failure. My husband's had congestive heart failure. We've had a family member lose their kidneys and stuff, and we drank that. They allowed my children to drink that water at Camp Lejeune, unbeknownst to us, and they were 3 and 6 at the time. And so I think that's just unconscionable. How can you do that? Shame on them. So basically all I have, there's not a day that goes by, Carol, that I'm not in some kind of pain.
Now, the listeners out there probably poised to say, well, you know, how can you blame them? But the reality is when you disclose, when you share with me, there was an actual report printed in the Honolulu Advertiser, Star Advertiser, what, on 7 August?
For the Camp Lejeune?
Yeah.
It was July 21 of this year. It was just this month, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And I went out there to the newspaper to pick up an editorial that was about the noise. So I thought, oh, this will be good. Well, I don't really, you know, because I don't read the newspaper. I do most of the stuff online like most of the people do. I found that article flipping through looking for that editorial.
Yeah, I want to point out so that the naysayers, you're anti-military, you're anti-American, and you're when the reality is this. Here is the article, records tied to alleged cover-up of tainted water at Marine Base. Now, Senator Daniel Leahy has posted these documents, some 8,000 documents showing the cover-up. So, folks, she's also participating in a survey because they're looking to find out who were impacted, what people were impacted, stationed there. So this is for real. Believe it or not, there are some people who come in and they're sick from everything. But in this case, she is the evidence. She is the living proof that this is a problem. And so bringing it back home to Kaneohe Marine Base, that's the problem. Can you introduce the party on from England?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Yes. Gloria is from England, and she, because I was having a heart procedure, that I contribute to the drinking water at Camp Lejeune. She flew in from England, and she was here January, February, and she experienced this bay issue with this noise and this aircraft firsthand, and she could not sleep while she was here at all. I mean, she got very little sleep. If we tried to have a decent conversation, she knows what it's like to hear the noise on the while you're trying to enjoy your television or while you're trying to talk to me. And she has called me from England several times, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, what was that?" Well, of course, you know, I'm being deafened, and it's like the last thing I have left of my health is my hearing and, you know, and my home that I want to enjoy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she can give you her firsthand experience with this noise, with this aircraft in this bay.
Can you describe that to us, Gloria, as you're sitting on the phone listening?
Well, when I was over there, I was there from mid-January till the end of March, and you couldn't watch the TV during the day because you'd be into a film and then you'd miss half of it because they kept coming over and coming over, almost shaking the house. And then in the evening, you couldn't sleep because they were revving the engines for, like, hours. It seemed like hours. And then one night, it was sort of every hour, a plane went over. You tried to, you're just dropping off. And then another one went over. And another, and another. It was horrendous. It really was horrendous. And I really don't know how Julie puts up with it because it's where I live in England, it is so quiet. We get the odd helicopter to go over. And that's when the police are just after somebody. So, you know, I don't know how they live with it around there. Even when we walk the dogs, planes were going over. So,
well,
it really, really is bad. Very bad.
Do you, when you're here, you reside in that area too, or are you just visiting?
I stayed with Julie.
Okay. So
I stayed in her house.
Well, nice and overwhelming, it sounds like.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
It sound as if the noise was overwhelming.
Oh, they were. I did actually go to Waikiki for 2 weeks, and obviously you couldn't hear anything there. It was like, some sleep at last. And then we went back to Julie's after we'd had the little visit in Waikiki, and back to those dreadful planes. And Julie used to ring them nearly every day, two or three times a day. Like she said, she could read the numbers off the veranda. And they just didn't want to know, really.
Apparently
she never got
not.
Any joy from them.
Yeah, and Carol, I'd like to point out here that, you know, she's calling me by my nickname.
The night, I'd come upstairs saying, "What's going on?" And she'd be on the phone to them again.
Okay. So the
I think something really needs to be done. I really do.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate. And as I say to the listeners here, there were a number of people have written me to ask, and my concern was that they want me to do the dirty work. And this person sitting looking at me in living color now is actually speaking out. So I applaud her. And for those of you that have this issue, and I was counting, there's about 19 emails where they've sent saying, do something. And then when we reach out to extend a courtesy to give them a voice, they do nothing. So shame on you, and we'll sort through the noise. If it's deafening, but we'll sort through it. And I guess those of you, it's unfortunate, the ones that complain and don't fight about it will benefit if we're successful in bringing attention and working this out and downplaying the sound. So Thank you for joining us. And is there anything
Thank
else?
You.
Rick? Okay. Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Hello.
Yes, good morning, caller. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling in reference to all of the plane noise.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead. I can hear you faintly. You there? Yeah. Anyway, this is a reality. I'm last night, late, I'm sitting trying to figure this out and not figure it out that if it's true or not. What I read with the Camp Lejeune, even though it's a different topic, it's water, and we're talking noise here, it's the same situation. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes, I was just calling to let you know about the noises.
Oh, okay.
Going over the people's homes out.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, the Hawaii area. I've got family members and all over there. In fact, one of my family members was there, and I can hear these planes coming long before they even get directly over her house.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have to, you know, just like pull the phone from my ears. It's just unbelievable, the noise.
Right. Wow.
I mean, doggone, you know, that'll deafen you. I mean, what's to say it doesn't start wrapping your house apart?
Well, last night, as an example, I was sitting talking to my guest here, and out of nowhere, I could hear it, and it was crackling, and I mean, the sound was deafening. You couldn't hear anything. And I don't know if even the approach out at Iroquois Point or the glide point over there at coming over Eva.
See, I live in South Carolina, and when I call to speak with, you know, family, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, is there anything else? How would you describe it other than just deafening? Have you witnessed anybody coming around asking, did the military do any survey? Have they come to you folk and ask you?
See,
any
South
of you?
I'm okay. Not in Hawaii, but, you know, when I call there, it's just 2 and 3 times a day. You can hear this noise. It's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally have to pull the phone away from my ear because mm-hmm. I can hear it coming before it gets there. Then when it gets right overhead, I mean, it's deafening, even to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for chiming in and sharing with us that bit of info.
Carol, I'd like to point out...
Thank you, caller.
Point out something
Hi.
Here.
Hi, bud.
I have called over there on the base and tried to do the President Obama thing. Come have a beer with me on my back lanai. And
mm-hmm.
no, nothing, because then that would mean that they knew this existed over the top of my house. But I've actually mm-hmm. done that. I've actually said, come have a beer with me. Now, I've also asked one of the representatives out in Kaneohe, come to my back lanai.
Mm-hmm.
Come spend the night. Come see this. Come hear this for yourself. This is very real. Last night alone, 11 o'clock, that roaring vibration, and I have got my rock wall up there. And it's not, it's some of it's falling apart from the top.
Mm-hmm.
But with that vibration, and I was in my house the day the Hilo earthquake happened, and they shut off all the lights in Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that vibration on my feet in my house.
Mm.
That vibration is nothing compared to the vibration that happens from that base. And my rock wall is falling apart from ground up in some spots. So it's from the vibration of the
mm-hmm.
ground. What's
mm-hmm.
this doing to the foundation of my house? I've had to replace a piece of concrete
mm-hmm.
that comes into my house with my pipe for my water mm-hmm. where it just vibrated. And I had some tile sitting there that shouldn't have been an issue. But that constant, that's what the guy that came and replaced the concrete and fixed the pipe told me.
Mm-hmm.
That constant vibration cracked that pipe underneath there. So he
mm-hmm.
had to dig it up all the way by the house.
Now, you there was a letter that you've inquired or that the military sent speaking to the sound, the decibels.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Do you have that?
Oh, I do.
Can you just real quick and short, like, tell us what was the response about the noise, something about the ocean waves.
I just need to read a little blip of this because it's okay. So stupid. It says, like you, we value our relationship with our community partners. In fact, many of the men and women of Team Hickam grew up in local communities. In the spirit of being good neighbors, the United States Air Force completed numerous airfield environmental assessments, including Kaneohe, in the 2002 study of options for C-17 training throughout the Hawaiian Islands. These are those big cargo planes. And, you know, I've asked, where's this 2002 study? Not been able to get a copy. Anyway, this study indicated that even over nearby land masses, only a 2 to 3 decibel increase over ambient noise levels of the surf and wind noise would occur. You know, my question to them is, did you do it at Pyramid Rock? We don't have a surf happening in the bay. We have, and I told them, lapping of water on the wall that you can sleep with because it's soothing. You know, where is this surf? It has to be over at the Pyramid Rock area. But by the way, still have not gotten a copy of that that study.
Yeah, that office, especially the PIO office, or whatever the public information office, is absolutely horrendous. They will string you along, put you off, and try to muscle you. But one of the things that struck me as very interesting is that even though you are reaching out and asking for help, they keep sending you back to suggesting you go to Senator Inouye, and when in fact, I think maybe the Inspector General or someone should get involved and file a complaint there, because you might get some better results. Because recycling you back to the local state senates and what have you,
it's like a loan modification.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you get somebody different.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes. Hi, Carol, and thank you for bringing this subject up. To your guest, I really do feel your pain. You know, I've lived in a quiet place, and for a while I was living Ever Beach, and you know the airlines, they go around Ever Beach. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it was so very, not even 20 minutes, every 10, 15 minutes, a plane would, I mean, you can literally see what kind of plane it is, and you can hear the TV, but I was told by my nephew, I stayed with my nephew, that they had to, all the residential, when they buy a home, they have to sign a waiver. But I when I heard your story, it sounds really horrible. I mean, it's like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And I really wish you well, but I called because I needed to know, you're talking about the water. What about the water?
Well, we'll talk about that shortly.
Because I hope it'll sooner rather than later, because I need to leave. And I found this, you know, your guest, her plight is something that, you know, should be told. And thank you, Carol, for... Mm-hmm. having her on, you know, so but she really has to make a lot of noise because sound like everybody is falling in deaf ears. Nobody want to really do anything, make a move.
Now imagine responding to that. I would sound silly. It's deafening. We need to make a noise. Exactly, I agree with you.
Hopefully, Carol, and you know, you find someone in the media or. Somebody, you know, that can assist her.
Well, this is the beginning of the process, so.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, good luck to you, to your guests. I kind of came in late, but I just was listening, and she sounds so sincere and so much in pain, and I mean, just the noise alone. Can you imagine the transit? Mm-hmm. I hate to skip the subject, but transit will cause. Everybody knows because steel on steel, because I've been to the mainland, and I tell you, staying at a hotel, you can hear them coming if the hotel is close to that rail.
Mm-hmm.
It's really noisy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Well, let me let her take
okay,
about...
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Real quickly, if you could, you lived in Camp Lejeune.
Yes.
And you were working there, you were... Military?
Yes.
Well, you were there living in...
No, my husband was active duty and I was reserve.
How long did you live there? And what time?
We lived there about 3 years. We got there in 1979.
Okay.
We moved into the base housing where they say they were contaminating the groundwater and stuff. But what's really horrific about this is they let my children drink it.
Okay. So that and others will understand, we're talking about noise at Kaneohe, but this is so relevant.
Yes.
Because it's a systemic problem. It's the institution approach. So Camp Lejeune, the water, in 1968, they knew that it was contaminated, and that's what this article was talking about, and the Associated Press actually wrote it and reprinted by Star Advertiser. 1968, they knew it. 1986, they closed the... and then 1996, they made it public, but they concealed...
Oh, no, let me tell you how I found out.
They conceal afterwards for an extended period of time. Now, how did you find out?
I found out by the grace of God, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever you'd like to call that higher being. It doesn't really matter to me, is that someone that I knew worked in DOD, and the message came across the computer system
mm-hmm.
that said they were looking for pregnant women who had had children with birth defects or had miscarried and stuff. And it just dawned on me. And mm-hmm. and I questioned. I said, well, I want to talk to somebody about this. So I sent an email, which I have this email.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what about my family member who was there and now has, you know, health issues? Well, pretty much they said, well, you know, there's no studies to prove anything's happened. There's no studies to prove that this causes damage
and
to your health.
This?
This was 19, I think it was, I think I got that message in 1999.
Okay,
somewhere between 97 and 99.
So 19, you're calling and inquiring, and in 1996 they made it public, but they didn't want to admit even.
No, they said no. I actually had to fight really hard with them mm-hmm. because they didn't want to acknowledge that it causes other health issues. And I found a letter last night that indicated, I don't know if I brought it with me, that is from them out on one study that I pulled, and it says, you know, they were acknowledging that people live there, but they were also saying that there was no known proof that it caused any health issues. So, you know, therefore, you know, you were just gaffed off.
So like the noise that we're talking about, they're not owning up to that.
No.
They're studies. They won't give you the actual studies.
No.
But in this case, there are a number of things that, for example, I'm, and you can go to carolcox.com and see the judiciary. There's the 8,000 some documents, a link to that for Patrick Leahy's office actually did the investigation on the committee. And but here at the Marine Corps, this is a letter you provided to me in this document, I'm sorry. Kind of scary, and it's document number 002-2901. It was dated, it's not as clear here, but anyway, in 1990-something, public health assessment and consultation. On January 9th to 10th, 1997, SDR staff toured the site, attended the Restoration Advisory Board meeting, and discussed the development of health consultation requested by the Restoration Advisory Board. That's that public group that comes in, and they just hand them a piece of it and then tell them to go away, and they don't have any. They're just there. They're just, the restoration boards are just useless, and they give them only what they know. But you now have a... what do you call it? A survey. You're now in receipt of a survey because you live there.
Well, there's a registry.
Yeah, you live there, and they now acknowledging, while they were not open with you initially in your initial calls, they've sent you a research or a survey because they now acknowledge that you did live there.
But let me tell you something really stupid, Carol, before I got that, is I had to prove to them. I had to prove to them. I dug through hundreds of my home documents. I had to prove to them I lived there, not them tell me I lived there. I had to prove to them I lived there.
Mm-hmm. So the...
And you know how, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to cry a little bit, but do you know how heart-wrenching that is?
Yeah. So now you have a survey. Did you bring that survey? And I want to give the address out to those former military people or people that are still active duty?
There is a link.
Military that needs to know that may not have the information. And she's going to try and get that. And if not, we don't have it now. We'll have a link up on carolcox.com where you can, if you lived at Camp Lejeune, worked at Camp Lejeune in those in that time period, or any time in where the water and you drank the water, and, or you had children exhibiting an illness, please go to that registry and find out how to get on. And again, it'll be at carolcox.com. And if those of you don't have computers, give me a call later, and then I will have the actual address. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Hello, can you hear me?
You have a question or comment?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
I've spent quite a bit of time looking at the issue of noise here. I moved here about 3 years ago, and it was very little noise. Of course, the P3s came in being replaced by something called the P8, which is going to be extremely noisy, and then the Ospreys. But all of us bought in this area, knowing that it was a military base there, and there's going to be noise. The people who bought on the ocean, shame on them complaining at all. However, King Intermediate School, which is at the end of the runway, those children should not have to be put through the abuse of that noise. There's numerous study, including the Heathrow study, which has been used in a lot of courts.
Yeah, back up for a minute. Call it back
up. Decibels are over 35 decibels in
call
an hour.
Call
it affects children's
call
learning.
Now, so we've
got
back
real, real issues. It's the children, not the people living on the bay, that ought to be the issue.
Okay.
They fought. They knew that there was a military base there, and
no.
They're going to have to live with it. We're using the Kaneohe board that put a resolution in. Many of our representatives are now involved. And I really don't think pitching on a talk show is going to help at all. Thank you.
Okay, well, there is a man. We'll describe him as a man because, first of all, men, that's what they do. They have their points. And you bought a house.
I did.
You didn't buy a house to have someone come along and destroy it. And you bought it, and you paid handsomely for it because of its setting.
But, you know,
and,
Carol, it wasn't like that when I bought this house. This noise was...
Anyway, the it wasn't like that. And caller, thank you for your comments. But isn't that amazing? The children that he's concerned with,
mm-hmm.
probably a great many of them live in those houses.
Yes.
So if they're on the playground at the school,
yes.
caller says, "Oh, shame on you for." But when they go home, it's okay.
They can't study
because their mother and father should have known better. When
yeah.
they, you know, this is an illness that permeates through the ranks in the communities. You always got some guy that knows it all, but the reality is, those jets. I was out there the other day and doing some diving, looking at the coral damage, looking to document that from the LCACs and the hovercraft. And let me tell you, they flew over and. I'm in the water underneath, and I could hear them with that crackling sound. My head was, I'm submerged in about 6 feet of water, and they were going.
Let me say this also, Carol, to the caller. You know, and he doesn't know that I live directly on the water, but it's not people who live directly on the water alone.
Yeah.
It's the people who live up on those coral houses. It's a bowl there. Mm-hmm. My hairdresser lives far off the ocean, and she can see this mm-hmm. and hear this. So it's not people who live right on the water. You know, shame on him for saying, you know, shame on you for buying a house on the water. But, you know, I bought that house because I was fortunate enough to find it.
Yeah.
And I can't, like, sell it and find another piece of property like that. But, you know, just because I found a piece of property, I shouldn't have to hear this, but in 1994 when I bought it, this did not occur to this degree. It was manageable noise.
Yeah. Well, and you're not the only one, and the value of your property And I, the caller, obviously, I would like to have had him to participate, but obviously he didn't want to let me ask a question. He wanted to make a statement. So what that tells me is that he's very secure. He's probably more than likely employed by the military or is active duty. And this is the illness that is prevalent in the minds. And this is the kind of people that go, oh, if you speak out, you're against the military. You don't want our soldiers to be trained. Only a person with bad intentions would introduce that to a conversation. When you buy a house, the reason you pay $1 million or $2 million for sitting on the hill of it's the view. So if someone come along and do something to obstruct that view, the value of your house now diminishes.
You bring a good point up,
so, you know, just in speaking, so this is the craziness about this and what's going to happen. Yeah, you can, my friend, if you dare, call back and introduce yourself. I'd love to talk to you to a greater extent. People say the media, go to the media. Well, the media is already present, and these things are unfolding. So, caller, just for your information, we get a lot done on this show, and I don't want to sit and name them, but start right here with the Carol Cox Show, and we'll get it done. Go ahead.
You know, I have something else to say. You bring up a good point when you build your house. But, you know, if you go from and it blocks the neighbor's view, I think you have to send paperwork and stuff. That neighbor has to also agree. I mean, you just can't go out there and just block that neighbor's view now. That's my understanding of how that works.
And it's a lot more than that. It's just the quality of living. But noise is noise.
But he brings up a good point about the schools I'd like to go back to.
Carla, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not the other caller, but I just wanted to make a couple suggestions. Number one, you have two important issues here, and I hope you could maybe try to separate them out. The noise issue is one issue, and the Camp Lejeune, the Agent Orange, is another issue.
Agent Orange?
What's that?
Is this something new, Agent Orange? What Agent Orange are you talking about?
I thought the Camp Lejeune was had Agent Orange contamination.
No, Carla, not at all. There's chlorine and other cleansing fluids, and that's the thing. And we're going to talk about it extensive later because it's not Agent Orange is not of concern in this issue.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No problem. I appreciate the admonishment, but this is extensive. And the simple daily use of chlorine I guess what we call it a sterilizing water or cleaning water. That is what the cover up was they said it was cleaning fluids when the reality is they knew it was a number.
It was dry cleaning fluid that they were letting seep into the ground well, as well as I believe jet fuel. There were a couple of other issues out there, but it definitely has nothing to do with Agent Orange.
Yeah, but it's okay, caller. I understand, and that's the sentiment we get in this town because this is a military motivated town. Now you know
okay.
It's my mistake.
It's okay.
I appreciate you calling. So thank you.
Okay.
All righty. Bye.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Carol, I'd like to go back to the schools and the kids. You know, this does happen over Ulamau Village, where they try to do some of the Hawaiian studies and stuff. And I worked there for a period of time when I first got here. And it wasn't to the degree there that I hear now, but it disrupts the children. Now, I have children in my home. They're not able to do homework when this happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the two-year-old, what do I do when it flies over and I don't have an opportunity to run while he's napping and cover his ears?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a big issue with children. They can't tell you their ears are ringing. They can't tell you they don't have tendonitis. They can't tell you this. The school level has to drop at King Intermediate. I heard things about, oh, that's a bad school. I've heard things, oh, Castle's a bad school. Perhaps this is the reason that they can't concentrate in school. When I try to work on my computer and stuff at home, I can't concentrate. It's like dripping water on your forehead. It's maddening. Your floors are vibrating and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it is disrupting the schools. Mm-hmm. It is disrupting the children who live in all the homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is an issue.
Yeah, and I have this practice of linking the two. I don't exclude, yes, it's water in Camp Lejeune, and it's noise from the aircrafts here. The common element is it's the United States Marine Corps. It is an institution, and it is how the institution has treated this. I raised the institutional problems there with Camp Lejeune, because at Camp Lejeune, the institution would not own up to or would not tell the public, and they covered it up. That's the whole gist. So the people here have been complaining, and as I said in my opening statements, the radiation, they lied about that. They withheld that information when the helicopter crashed. Well, is that anti-American? Well, I'll stand here and wave the flag alongside of you, but I will also be, you can notice me and recognize me, because I'm also going to be attempting to tell you, if you're harming the people that you're supposedly protecting, then you're really not doing your job.
Yeah, and for the people who are asking about the Camp Lejeune issue, what really got it started was there was a guy enlisted. He lived there as well. He lost his daughter to leukemia at the age of 7. It was heart-wrenching for him. He has driven this issue. If they go out and look at, it was on Netflix recently. It's been on the news just recently about this documentary, and it's called Semper Fi. And it goes into the documents he's found for the cover-up and about him losing his daughter. He's trying to pass the Imslinger, I think it's Imslinger, I may not have that right, act, where the people who live there are all going to go to the military installation. And that way, you know, it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see what's wrong with all of us, that we live there and we're having health issues and stuff. So he's trying to get that passed. But that article states that it's passed, I think, the Senate, due to go into the House, I might have that backwards, in August.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've worked that. This man has put his heart and soul into this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they go out there and they do look at that documentary, I've not been able to watch it all the way through because it's too heart-wrenching for me, because I'm personally involved. But if they get that Semper Fi documentary, I think it will really help them understand.
But, again, here's a letter dated August 26, 1981, it says, to the commander, or from the commander, Atlantic Division, Naval Facilities Engineering. Subject, monitoring data for trihalomethanes, and that's associated with after the constituents in chlorine for treating wastewater and drinking water interacts with organics and gives a kind of a deadly mixture, cocktail. So here's an article written in Mail Online back in 2008. Chlorine in tap water nearly doubles the risk of birth defects. And there are other implications now. And I don't want you to think that I'm dreaming this up or we're paranoid and I've joined in the paranoid parade. Enclosed summary of trihalomethanes regulations. So this is the Navy acknowledging that there's high counts of trihalomethanes in the drinking water. And these are some of the issues that were being covered up. And so when they won't give you the full report that you're requesting over here, when they lied about they didn't say anything about the radiation falling from the helicopter when it crashed, and then they had a raft and they moved it around unprofessionally and not consistent with the rules and contaminating this area and that area and had a raft adrift, they lied about that. So I'm here to join in concert with you, and those of you probably think that I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but the reality is when an institution behaves in this fashion, we have a right to ask questions and we have a right to draw our own conclusion if they fail to give us information as we request.
Yeah, and you know, Carol, when they drink that, so, you know, my esophagus burns every day.
Mm-hmm.
I've had radiation on my thyroid done just recently. You know, and they can't say, you know, it may take 10 years to catch up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drink a big, I like to do the Aaron Brockovich to the military, scoop it out of the groundwater stuff and say, here, have a glass full. You know, have a couple of glassfuls. God bless you. Have some.
Call a good morning. You have a comment, a question?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Hi. I also live in the area, and I'm one of the Kaneohe Bay Residents Initiative,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of us. And, you know,
and what is that initiative?
It's a group of neighborhood families that are very concerned about their standard of living, the living environment, the quality of life. And it has changed markedly in the last few months. Obviously, RIMPAC, but even when that wasn't here, it
mm-hmm.
was much worse than it had been prior. But the issue about the children should be brought up again. The caller that was mentioning it failed to mention that nighttime awakenings also affect
mm-hmm.
educational learning, and there have been numerous studies that have shown that. The military, when they did the measurements of noise, did a model that was computerized and did not have measurements in the actual community. In the past, they did because they were forced to. And when those measurements were made, they were much higher than what they actually thought or reported.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important for us to have them do it right and notice exactly what is going on.
So what are you proposing, or have you proposed this to the
Yes, we all have. We've all written in.
And what's their response?
We've written into the EPA. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's very difficult to get a response. If you go in person, they're extremely personable and very accepting of any criticism, and they say, please call us if you have a complaint,
mm-hmm.
and we do, and we never hear back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's sort of like, go there, visit, drink the Kool-Aid, and,
come and
home, feel good for a while, and then it's the same.
Yeah.
So I think that really what we propose to them is that they do their sound studies in a way that's valuable and not just valuable to one
mm-hmm.
party.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Kaneohe Bay Initiative and the group there, there is a petition, correct?
Yes, there is.
And where would one find that petition, online, or how
it's,
could they?
There's one on Facebook under Kaneohe Bay Residents Initiative.
Okay.
If you do a search under that, you can find it.
Kaneohe Bay
Residents Initiative. Right.
Okay. I'll get a link and put up on the website, but I hope you all luck, because if it sounds like some fragmentation there, if it is a problem, and I'm not a sound man, but I know when I can't hear, and when I see an aircraft flying and then I can't hear, I don't want to hear about decibels.
Right. Well, we do measure the decibels ourselves. There's actually an iPhone app you can buy for free,
mm-hmm.
And it does. It's a decibel reader, but there are other decibel readers around, and you know they're talking about an average decibel reading.
What's the reading that you folk have?
Over 90 and over 100 at times.
And
when
what,
some of these planes are flying.
90 and then 100 at times. And what
yeah.
is the allowable
but,
or?
Yeah, the problem is they're giving you an average reading.
Right.
And it may very well be true, but the plan is to increase activity over the area by about 49%.
Mm-hmm.
So when that activity increases, you're going to have your average clearly increase, but the model isn't showing that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, that they're not using real measurements.
The decibel HUD is what, 55?
They're stating 55. One of your callers just recently said 35 for over school.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the FAA accepts 55 in residential areas.
And then so you folks are recording, and then we know someone that for the detractors. You're not professionals, but that app is out there, and you're finding 90 to 100?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that's not the average.
Right.
So we can't really tell you what the average is, and I don't want to say that their average is incorrect.
Right.
Their model
mm-hmm.
is flawed.
Let me see if I can get this other caller. Hold on.
Sure.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Turn your radio down.
Type neighborhood board, because I think it will be funded by the city and county. I understand that we have a total of 36 neighborhood boards, and only 33 has been active. The three vacant neighborhood boards is Mauna Loa Airport and Kaneohe Marine Base. So I was thinking,
okay.
Because you folks have a lot of concerns and complaints, have you folks thought about forming a Kaneohe Marine Base?
Hey, thank you. Go ahead.
No, that's probably a good idea. But you know, my question about let's go to the noise and stuff. I was just listening, and now I've got a bunch of different comments to make. But you know, I've been on that base, been out the get back gate. There's a sign there, and I've taken a picture of it that says, "No formation running past this point prior to 0700." No chanting past this point at any time. You know, and I called, and I got the director of public affairs, and he tells me when I bring this up, he goes, well, we have to be mindful of our neighbors on that side. I said, so what are you saying about the people on this side that's hearing the aircraft and stuff? But my understanding from a reliable source is that this sign got put up there because they had a retired officer that lived out the back gate mm-hmm. who it was disturbing, you know. So what's that about? I mean, I'm really offended, and especially when he told me that. You know, we've got to be mindful of our neighbors on that side. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that say about the Kaneohe side? Mm-hmm. What exactly are you saying to me?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Carla, you have any more comments?
Oh, are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Yeah. I also had heard similar that the reason that the engine run-ups, which are very annoying, they're kind of a low-pitched rumble that can go on for hours, are being done on the Kaneohe Bay side facing towards the mountain.
Yes.
Is because they had been done prior, and I think your guest actually mentioned this. They had been done prior on the other side, but they were disturbing the general and the officers who lived there. And apparently it was when it was done there, it was done in a quiet house or where they would cover it so that the noise didn't radiate that much. And now apparently it's being done out in the open.
Okay,
that's extremely irritating to this neighborhood.
She's missed a caller. It's two different things that are happening, I'm told. The hush house, that's the test cell that my understanding was originally in a hush house, and they've moved it out onto the end of their base there so that it blows across, it vibrates our house. They put engines on there, and they test them. And they test them all hours of the night. Now, I did see an email from someone that said, oh, well, they thought it was the run-ups. Well, my understanding now, there's the different issue, that they rev that engine or whatever, and so they're doing it on our side instead of doing it over there closer to the officers' housing. So there's two different vibration noise issues going on.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, and we need to get them because I have an article that a school was developing to train test cell operators to put, and they were building a hush house mm-hmm. on that university with the concrete walls, and they were doing it right where there is an article out on the internet that does that. So you know what? Put that back in the hush house because I never heard that before, and all of a sudden in the last year or so, all of a sudden that started. So you know what? If that's true, if you've moved it out of that hush house and you've stuck it out there for us to hear, put it back in the hush house. But mm-hmm. my understanding is they needed that building for something else. So what's that mean to me? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, caller, thank you for calling, and we're going to coming down to the close of the show. But if you have any more, please feel free to send us an email at carol@carolcox.com. And I hope that your folk are successful. And I think the only way, contrary to what the person say, you start here and the word will get out and everybody understand when something is wrong. Noise is noise. So thank you.
Okay. I hope you can hear that. They're starting now.
They are?
Yes.
Put your phone
Hold on. You can hear.
I can hear
This
it.
Is just a quiet one. I don't know if it was picked up, but
yeah.
It's a small jet.
Well, anyway, please give us a call, and then next week we're going to be talking about the water thing because it's interesting. And, again, for those that can't connect the dots, we'll connect them for you. It's the same entity that the – so real quick, we've got
– Yeah, and
thank you, Carla.
I want to bring one other thing up, Carol. There's a couple of things here, you know, that Hickam doesn't own any runways. What does that mean? How long has that been going on? That's what I'm told. But the other issue is, you know, the Marine Corps base has quiet hours. Now, I understand there's two definitions to that. I'm not really sure about the one for their housing. I do know someone that lived in housing there, and they go, well, you know, they have quiet hours. They're not supposed to make noise from, like, 9 o'clock at night until, like, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then another quiet hours is where the Marines are going to have some event or some ceremony. So they let all the planes know, don't do this because we're going to be doing this. Well, what about when I have guests over? Can I call over and request quiet hours so you're not bothering me from this hour to this hour while I entertain my guest? I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, it sounds like guys just behaving in a fashion power. And we'll keep watching. And if you'd like to, I'm going to do some extensive reading on that 8,000 documents mm-hmm. on the Camp Lejeune. While the caller said it wasn't relevant, they're separate. They're, in fact, twins.
Yeah.
And joined at the sides or at the hip. And if you would like to, and I'll get that survey because I know there are military people or ex-military people that did serve at Camp Lejeune that are here affiliated need to know this because, as you pointed out, they covered it up, as Senator Leahy had said. They covered it up, as the article said. They covered it up. I'll start with that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and my husband and I have similar health issues, so, and I don't have it with my siblings, so I'm like, you know, how can that be? I've had congestive heart failure. He's had congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. Well, where is that in my siblings that, mm-hmm. that don't exist? He has none in his siblings mm-hmm. that don't exist. I mean, so, you know, we're not related at all. We're not cousins. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing. Mm-hmm. So, but I would really like to come back and discuss a lot of the Camp Lejeune okay. issues.
Well, thank you. And we'll be back the next hour talking about homeless shelters and what have you. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. We are going to be talking about the homeless issues here and some of the things specifically at the Next Step Homeless Shelter. And I have two guests. We have two guests here in the studio. And we I also have another guest. He's going to participate later on, Benson Troy. He's a freelance writer and advocate for the homeless. And I have Auntie Pat, who's directly related to the Next Step Shelter, and Deborah Parmalee. She's also a shelter member and advisory board there. And good morning. How are you, the two of you? And can you explain?
Good morning.
Okay. Can you give us a brief description of the advisory panel and what is it, how did it come about and or what does it do, first of all?
Well, first, there was a meeting, mm-hmm. a shelter meeting with the whole shelter involved, and there was a lot of issues that were being addressed. For myself, one of them was our helpful list. They use the helpful list so that everyone has chores that they're helping to keep the place clean.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my issues was with them on our first shelter meeting was putting people on the helpful list that had disabilities and legitimate disabilities mm-hmm. with doctor's notes, but their names kept coming up on the helpful list
mm-hmm.
and it was clear and it was said that these people are not able to physically do chores, but repeatedly their names kept showing up. One of them was my husband
mm-hmm.
who has congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a stroke. His heart works less than 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these names kept reappearing, and it was becoming consistent twice a month, three times a month, and I kept explaining to them, why are you doing this? And I said it in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep putting these people who have legitimate notes from doctors? Are you, I don't understand, overriding the doctors by putting their names on? Are you able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all know the higher power is a medical note.
Mm-hmm.
From a doctor.
So the doctor issues this directive that this person is restricted to doing any kind of work or certain work that requires motion of their arms or whatever.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you provide that note.
Yes.
To the staff and to the director or whomever, the
yes.
management of that Next Step. And then they ignore that and then go ahead and assign, for example, your husband.
Yes.
What type of chores were is it that he was subjected to or assigned?
Once he was put on chairs.
Mm-hmm. Lifting chairs.
Lifting chairs, putting them up on the table. He was wiping tables. I mean, of course he didn't do them because I didn't allow him to do them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I brought it up to them, they said, you know what, everyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why he can't do it. Mm-hmm. So they started to put him on microwave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I explained to her the wiping motion, mm-hmm. Just that alone. Sometimes the stains are difficult to come out. That's too much for him. He can barely walk a block
mm-hmm.
without stopping to rest.
Mm-hmm.
So I told her, there's no way he can do it. So I started to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now my name ends up on the list once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And with it's shared with everyone. But then again, I'm telling them, you know, what are you guys doing? You're still putting these people on. So one day I was doing my husband's chore, and another man was doing the chairs, and I heard him say, well, you know, I don't understand why they gave me the chairs, because I have a bad back. I have a letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to them and I said, what are you guys doing? Why are you doing this? And so she says, the person that does it.
Who is that person?
Omi. She says, well, you know what? Why do you care what I do with them? I said, what do you mean, why do I care?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what you guys are supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, you know what? I don't have a note for your husband either. I said, you know what? This is not about my husband. I'm not here about my husband's issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here about the residents.
Mm-hmm.
He has a bad back. Why would you put him on chairs?
And so, and you being the advisory member, and they were supposed to listen to you folk and then incorporate.
Exactly.
But they,
no.
It's just a name, and that's all
it
is.
That's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to let Deborah speak. I want to talk to one specific, and we won't mention names of the family members. But there's an incident where there's a 4 or 5 year old girl.
Yes.
And there at the facility, and by the way, Darlene Hine is the director.
Yes.
And Jason Aspero is the, what is his official title?
Shelter coordinator.
Shelter coordinator. And then I've spoken before last week that his expertise, he has no formal education in social work, but other than political science degree, and I haven't seen the degree. But if I could set the stage, I was there in the park where this family was evicted.
Yes.
A little girl, 4 years old, and two other teenage girls, and the father, and I don't know if the mother is, I don't know the full. But I was there, and the young lady didn't make it to register her for school. And in conversation, it came up that one of the reasons that she couldn't prepare because she didn't have a personal hygiene, the women kits
right.
and napkins and all. And but she had some, but they were still being held hostage in the shelter.
Right.
And when they were evicted, they couldn't take all of their materials because they were promised that they would be allowed to come back and they would bring them food if they stand out of the gates. Well, they never brought them food for at least a week. And they had all of their personal hygiene materials and napkins, sanitary and all in their cubicle.
Yes.
But the administration wouldn't accommodate them. So seeing that and hearing that story, I immediately call around and I talked to Darlene Hine, the director.
Right.
I don't have time for this, she says. And I tried to plead with her to describe to her this family and this young girl's plight. And she, again, said, I don't have time for this, and you don't understand. There's two sides to every story. And I'm thinking, what is the other side when this young lady is in need of her personal hygiene
right.
materials? What is the other side? Is it that rigid in that? So to follow up, and I was so moved that I contacted Will Aspero because my concern is that this is Senator Will Aspero's son.
Absolutely.
And so he is closely in as a senator in dealing with homelessness, and I'm concerned still yet, how did this gentleman get appointed to this position? Was it because of his father's name or his father's involvement, or is this a payback? I don't know, and I hope to get to the bottom of it. But Darlene told me that when asked, well, why don't you hire someone that has the expertise and social skills in social training and formally. She says, well, I'm not getting rid of him. And in fact, you might as well ask them to fire me before you, before he gets fired. So that sets the stage. This situation with the young girl, the 4 or 5 year old girl, you witnessed this, the thing unfold.
Yes.
Can you, without mentioning her name? And,
right,
and
sure.
I think there's greater details, and I think it's important. I want the listener to know that homeless people are not whiners and moaners, and then those that are sitting at home going, well, you know, what do they want? Can you just initiate, go ahead and share the story, how it, what took place, where it was, and how it unfolded?
You know, what happened was the little girl,
mm-hmm,
and the little boy were, you know, like children do, play,
mm-hmm,
doctor. Okay, so they were in there, and they were playing doctor, and mom finds out about it, and she goes to the office, and she starts talking to them, to the administration. So she's telling them, and she's letting them know what happened. So dad is notified of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So his daughter is 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She's 4 years old. Of course he's going to be upset,
mm-hmm,
because she's portrayed as being the aggressor in this. So now he's really upset, and he wants to, you know, he wants to discuss this with,
right,
the mother,
mm-hmm,
of the other child. Well, no. They won't allow him to.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they kept her and her children in the office, sort of like protection,
mm-hmm,
away from this. Now Vito's dad is, oh, I'm sorry, that is reasonable. He'll, you know, if you talk to him and be honest with him, he'll know your sincerity and he'll be okay with it. But they said, oh no, flat out no. So he becomes upset, so he's yelling and screaming, which is understandable. His 4-year-old daughter is
being accused.
Yeah, right. And so he's upset. So he's yelling, he's screaming, and he does that. He does,
mm-hmm,
a lot of yelling and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
His bark is worse than his bite.
Mm-hmm.
So they immediately call the sheriffs first.
Mm-hmm.
So they come in, and they remove him out to the back of the area. He's still upset. He's got these 3 girls, and any time Vito gets upset, sheriffs are always called in. They're always called in just because he's really loud, and that's, for the most part, that's him. He's loud.
Mm-hmm.
So next thing we know, they're being removed.
Mm-hmm.
They're being removed, and it's late.
And about what time is it that they removed him, the sheriff removed him?
Oh, my goodness. I think it was
at night.
Very late.
And so they're booted out on the street.
Booted out on the street.
Both the 2 girls and the little girl, the three girls.
4, 11,
mm-hmm,
and 16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she just turned,
right,
17
she
in
just,
the park,
she, right,
was telling.
Absolutely. And you know, and it's just consistent of them. Anytime it involves him,
mm-hmm,
sheriffs have called immediately, and it's just because he's loud.
Or is he just loud, or is he reacting to what he believes in unjust? A 4-year-old girl?
What he believes in being treated unjustly, and his little daughter is involved. So,
mm-hmm,
yes, he's,
mm-hmm,
upset. He's,
mm-hmm,
a dad.
Now, they, to go further, I was told, and I interviewed him as well, and he shared with me that instead of dealing with it, they then decide to throw a little muscle in by calling Child Protective Service.
Absolutely.
Yet, the little boy involved in this, I'm told by others that in the shelter, and maybe you can come, that little kid had been involved in other instances of inappropriately touching,
there,
and he's 7 or whatever.
Yeah, I believe he's either 7 or 8. He looks,
okay,
about
and but yet, they didn't evict him. Didn't evict the family.
They weren't reprimanded in any way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that. The children need help.
Mm-hmm.
Going through something like that, they need help. They need counseling. They don't need to get tossed out on the street. They,
mm-hmm,
need help.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what a 4-year-old kid can do and do a crime. I don't But again, this speaks to this process and what you, the homeless and the tenants there in that facility are subjected to, the inconsistent application of law, policy, practices, and just downright discriminatory or the reaction. So, Deborah, what you have written to them to talk to them, to the administration, to say, enforce the policies, enforce the rules, but make them equitable in the enforcement, right?
Yes, and actually it's just unconscionable what they did to this family.
Mm-hmm.
The little ones, they did nothing, absolutely nothing against the law.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were kicked out of the shelter. And we have people who continually doing things against the law, bullying, harassing, drugs,
mm-hmm.
selling drugs, taking drugs. All these are against the law, and you keep hearing, we have to see it. We have to actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're allowed to stay in the shelter.
But they didn't see the
exactly.
inappropriate touching on the
exactly.
little girl's part.
Right.
So it's just such a set of double standards. It's unjustifiable, irrational. It's just, to me, it's just power and control. Who are you to decide what's right, what's wrong, and then unjustly throw people out?
Mm-hmm. So, again, you have shared a number of letters, and I really appreciate it. And the one here, let me just find the actual, and I really appreciate you. You raise it. Next up, coordinator Jason Espero has a degree in political science. We've talked about that. Then you mentioned a number of them. That was a resident slipped and fell on a wet floor. And then you're saying that Jason was standing directly in front of the female member and did not even run to her rescue or come to her rescue to help her get up. Did not ask if she was all right or if she might need EMT.
I know, and these kinds of things, it just shows a total lack of compassion and kindness from him at any level.
Mm-hmm.
Compassion is not something that is learned. Either people have it or they don't have
mm-hmm.
it. And the bottom line is, how can you trust people, staff people, Jason or Darlene, to look after the welfare of everyone in the shelter, when they obviously have ulterior motives going on, because they do not care about the people? Nobody in their right mind would want these types of people in charge of their livelihood and mm-hmm. responsible for taking care of people.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the listeners and many of you out there, is this Manini, is this petty that we're discussing? No, I'm trying to show and give the tenants of that shelter a voice, that they're rational, thinking people that can converse, and they're not evil, and they didn't commit some horrendous crime that they have been confined to the shelter. Things went wrong. You, for example, Pat, you medical problems, then your husband's situation.
Right.
What was your profession before you in got involved in this situation?
I used to work for Kokuakalihi Valley in mm-hmm. the families area.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the community center
mm-hmm.
up at Hawaiki,
mm-hmm.
which is part of the Hawaii Housing mm-hmm. Association.
So I'm hoping to giving a voice to this, because we stand back, and I say we, because we citizens who have something project on you who have had misfortunate incidences and what have you, illnesses and all. And we really don't care. All we think is we put a piece of meat, if I might describe it, on the table, and all we know is when we return the next day, it's gone. That's how we treat the homeless, when in fact you're rational, breathing, thinking family members, sisters, brothers, aunts, cousins, and just citizens. And in this case, what I've witnessed at this shelter, personally, in my opinion, I will never donate personally to that organization, period, because I'm hearing too many stories, and while some of them you have to be careful, and some of the tenants there call me and share it and say that, do they have to pay rent, like $60 or something a month?
That's correct.
Now, I was told this by one individual. Then a couple called me and said that he feels so guilty in that he can't work because he is really destitute. He has no money, no sources. He can't work, and he has doctors, and he showed me. But what he said was that he is encouraged, inclined to go out and do something illegal. And I asked, what is that illegal act? He said, he sells his food stamps.
Ah.
Why? Because he sells the food stamp so that he can pay the rent, because they charge him $60.
That's true. That's true. And actually, they hide behind it, and they call it some program fees. I'm in no program there.
And this person,
the federal government already pays for my
right.
cubicle.
This is what's scary, because why are they charging you when the, if I understood right, and in my calls around the state offices and the city, that this program is already funded.
Right. Already paid for. And now they're collecting fees on top of people who can't work. I mean, this is why I'm in the shelter in the first place. Yeah. I need a job to get me out of there.
Mm-hmm. And so I look at that, and then another one says, well, you know, here's something other, another silly thing about this operation and the decisions made by the directors or the state or whoever, and that is they kick you out at 8:30. Why don't they partition off a little area to use it for training, data entry, or teach them how
exactly.
to answer phone, or teach them some kind of skill, but they have to leave?
I've been repeatedly in our meetings asking for mm-hmm. some sort of job training, something where they can help assist,
mm-hmm.
do resumes, put them out there. Some of the people there actually need to be, their hands need to be held to mm-hmm. follow through with this process.
You described that the other day. You were talking to me about the various rules that you're not... you're actually advocating to have rules and have them enforced because
in
it
fact,
benefits
yes,
them. Can
absolutely.
You explain that?
I mean, we're portrayed as not following the rules. Well, if anything, staff, administration, they need to follow the rules. I wasn't able to get into the shelter if I didn't provide them with a doctor's letter. Then they turn around and I give them the doctor's letter and they disregard it.
Mm-hmm.
By putting my husband on the helpful list to do
mm-hmm.
chores.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all I'm saying is, you're going to put out rules. Follow your own rules.
Right.
How hard is that? I have repeatedly said in our meetings, we need to be consistent with the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Staff need to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have to have, if they can help the members follow the rules just by simply saying, no, you aren't able to do this consistently, you would probably have people who are more capable of acting more appropriately out in public
mm-hmm.
because everyone knows you have rules regardless of where you are, shelter or out in public. I mean, society, you need rules.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's their lack of following the rules and being persistent in it and having members follow, they're constantly bending and twisting rules as they go along. Before this, when this, the interviews started, we were allowed to bring our families up to near the gate,
right.
the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
When the interviews started, so Jason felt fit to say no more cars allowed in.
Which interviews are you?
At the park.
Okay.
The interviews.
Oh, the press conference.
Kaka'ako.
Okay, the press
Beach
conference
park.
That we
press
had. So as a retaliation.
Right. No more cars were allowed to enter near the gate to unload things that the families needed that hang out at the park all day because the shelter is closed.
Right.
So cars aren't allowed. They have to unpack out. Way out at the roadside.
And then hike it in.
But
he implemented that because of the press conference.
Retaliation.
Now, let me ask you this. I've heard from many sources, and speak to it if you know to be factual, that food is delivered by many sources, donated cases and boxes of food.
Yes.
And that instead of giving it to the staff, not to the staff, but to the tenants there, who it's donated for, some of the staff has been witnessed packing it up and putting it in their private cars and hauling it off.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely true. I can say absolutely true because I've seen it myself. They've been loading up their cars in the wee hours of the morning with cases of stuff.
Like
sometimes
what kinds of?
I've seen them putting in, what do you call those drinks? Coffee drinks? Iced coffee? I've seen that going in. But some of the stuff they put in, they're starting to put them in boxes. They're starting to put them in large black trash bags and still loading up their car.
Their private car. And this is a staff. And
staff.
Someone said they witnessed cases of Vienna sausage, for example.
Being brought in, ice cream being brought in.
Spam. Spam was brought in as well.
Let me ask you this in that same vein. Now, I was told that they were the staff, someone donated ice cream, brought ice cream there, and the staff never passed it out to the
Absolutely.
Tenants. Then they were the staff was walking around eating the
eating
ice cream. But
didn't.
Is that true?
Yes.
Did you personally
Absolutely.
Witness that?
I was there. They walk around the shelter. They walk around
eating ice cream, but not distributing
not
it to the tenants.
Not even offering to the children.
And the strange part of this is they think that we're not made aware by people who donate this. You know, they're probably expecting a thank you from us. And it's like, oh, you donated ice cream? No, we never saw any of it. We never were able to enjoy it.
Some of the things we've seen, I've been there since 2011, June. I have seen so many things come and leave there. And
never
nothing's been brought out. And in fact, we have sometimes, some mornings, staff will throw out a bunch of bread and rolls into a big wagon. And the children, not suspecting anything, run there, grab things out of the wagon, and start eating. A couple mornings I've come by, they're eating moldy stuff. So I'm grabbing it from the children and telling them, don't touch it, it's no good. And I'll go back and let the parents know, don't let them touch it. Check it.
So the children are eating molded bread while the staff is packing it in their cars, the good breads and the good goods.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I understand we're homeless. That doesn't mean you treat us inhumanely. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Who does that? Would you do it to your own child? Would you allow them? Why would you do it to
this
someone?
This group of people probably would. I'm beginning to, because you can't have this number of repeated offenses. But while I got Benson Troy, and you're an advocate for the homeless. Real quick, can you tell us, and what do you think about this? And I understand you were looking at some of the
next
steps.
It's alarming, and it bears closer examination. You have to almost follow the money to see what's actually happening. And as you said before, that you don't want to directly donate any monies to them. But I'm going to say something that might be discouraging to you. They're donating to it anyway.
Okay.
And that's through federal funding, which is everyone pays their national, their federal tax. And this money comes through the federal government to the state government, and then money filters down to what I see this shelter and IHS and other ones being catch basins for funding. It's a flow-through funding system, and we're funding our own demise.
Hold that thought there. Carla, you have a comment, a question, real quick? Hello? Good morning, Carla. You have a comment, a question? Good morning, Carla. You have a comment, a question?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, in regards to that lady accusing the staff of taking all this food that was destined for these homeless people or the people in the shelter, can she name them right now, or does she have any way to take pictures of them doing it? But, in fact, can she name them right now, the staff who she knows has been taking food, which I consider to be theft? I'll hang up and listen because I think I have a bad connection.
Okay, thank you, Ed. We won't name them now because I've been given names, But again, go ahead.
I had members in the staff shared the story with me that even a staff member shared with them that staff is taking, there was like spam donated, and staff members were just loaded up and taking it home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're working on that to document it, to actually, what the caller just asked, to actually get photographs. But again, just because you see a person putting something in a box and in the car and driving off, you're going to need the director and the administrator to actually prosecute them, because if they're going to turn around and give them an explanation or an excuse, oh, they were transporting it to another shelter. You know, this is the problem. But when you're eating, when a delivery truck bring ice cream and donate it to the shelter, and the staff is walking around eating that ice cream and not giving it to the children, that's the most obvious thing. But
yeah. And it also shows like there's a total lack of accountability going on in the shelter. Just simple procedures of inventory control would show where all this stuff is going.
Well, there's any number of ways you can challenge this. There's federal violations. There's violations of their own tax status. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of things that are going on here. And, oh, my goodness, one could just say it could hit the fan.
Not the ice cream.
Not the ice cream, sir.
You know, I just want to say to that, I brought it up to Darlene in our meeting, and what I was told by one of the other committee members who's also employed by them was, it's none of our business what happens to the items that are donated. And so I made it perfectly clear to him that, you know what, anything that gets donated to the shelter does involve us. It is our business. We are the members.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you think that? And Darlene jumps in and says, well, you know what, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And you know what, my staff are allowed to eat. Yes, but not by the caseloads.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we're following the money trail here, the federal government has what's called the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness. And that was the United States government's effort to help end homelessness and do all sorts of programs under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And that included giving money to all the departments in the federal government, who in turn tell the states, you have to found your own Interagency Council on Homelessness. So the various states have that, and they get the funding from the federal government. And the state takes that money and doles it out to the various shelters and various charities. Everybody's funding it. One can say they don't want to contribute to such a thing. They're shocked by hearing this, but we're all funding this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everyone's business. These people are doing things that can strip them of their tax status. They're doing things that could get them into federal prison.
Mm-hmm.
These people could have a sentence 5 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing with fire right here.
But we'll need a regulatory body to do that, because if the governor, I'm suspecting that Mr. Colin Kippen will try and do something to look into these things, I'm hoping, and I've spoken with him at length. But it's going to take someone, for example, the city gave money, as I've described here on this earlier shows, gave money in the form of loans. And now they're trying to work it out and hide it from HUD to convert the loans to grants. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to cover up for them, and then I spoke to HUD, and HUD is lame, and I don't know if he wants to have a membership in the Wildlife Country Club, but he's not aggressive either. But just for entertainment, I'll say, you shared with me a story yesterday. You have a little solution. If you could, take 2 minutes or so to describe that.
It's not really so much of a solution. It's to point out the various difficulties with everything.
Mm-hmm.
But as the little story I had shared with you yesterday, it brings a sharp focus to it. Let's just pretend that everything's going wrong, and so the homeless decide to organize. Well, one day the mayor wakes up, and an aide runs into the mayor's office and says, Mr. Mayor, come out to the stairs. You won't believe what's out there. The mayor comes out on the stairways of the city building, and there in front of the city building, in front of the mayor's office, he'd find all the homeless people on the island lined up in military formation. He goes, what's going on? One person comes up to them and says, Mr. Mayor, we're assembled here today to tell you that we're not going to cooperate with any laws you have implemented against us. As such, we're here assembled today to turn ourselves in. Where do we report for processing? We want to know where we go for fingerprints and photographs. House us in the jails. How many days would it take for the city and the state to house those people in those facilities before it costs the taxpayer $1 million? And would they say anything at that point? And as they are released from those jails, reassemble in front of the city hall and tell the mayor, you turn yourself in again.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to do something.
Yeah. And that's basically what's happening. They run him out of the park. Mufi Hanneman, homeless. I would say, he reminds me of that movie Rawhide, you know, the Western, where they're herding the cattle. Mufi on top of the big blue ox, you know, cause and riding and cracking the whip. Oh, we forgot one. We left one over there on the bench. Go back there and get him, boy. We can't have this, you know. We got the hotels to run. It's bad image. And then run him out to Howbush. And, oh, well, hey, send some cowboys over there and run him out. And, you know, and that's, and now he's going to ride his big babe blue ox into Congress in Washington. Anyway, no, I'm sorry.
I apologize. Yeah, but with that, they don't realize they might be even be threatening their federal funding, because there was a report issued by the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, who pretty much read the Riot Act to all the states who are implementing out-of-sight, out-of-mind laws, sweeping the homeless camps here in, from mm-hmm. point A to point B, getting rid of them. This is not what the Interagency Council on Homelessness was supposed to be formed for. They're supposed to concentrate on the problem. Linda Lingle, back I think in 2004, implemented what's called a 10-year plan for solving homelessness. Well, we have two more years left before that's ended, and yet in those 10 years, nothing's been done.
Well, no, she's gotten several $1 million to run for Senate, she won't be homeless anymore.
Oh.
You know, she lost her, you know, lost her home in government. You know, so now she's, you know, she's going to have a home. You know, I mean, she's. They're all, it's unfortunate, but speaking of voting and all, the people, they don't get counted. A great many of them do not, the homeless do not get counted in the census. Because I asked some guys that live down at McCulley in that area, in that canal there, and I said, ask them, did you ever see anybody from the census come down here and ask you how many people in your tent? No.
Oh, wow. Then they weren't doing their job.
So, this is how bad it is. And I know some of you out there listening probably going, so what? These are people that made bad decisions. Well, if we all were punished for bad decisions, we'd all be homeless.
Wow.
I guarantee you. Because somewhere down the line, we made bad decisions. Our uncles, brothers, or cousins bailed us out and gave us that lifeline. Who knows? And some of us were born with a silver spoon in the mouth, and then some of us was born into politics, and so you get your job handed to you.
Right.
Exactly. And you'd be homeless
whether
if you
you're qualified
didn't.
Or not, you get
right.
the job handed.
Yeah. So, anyway, but it impacts. Go ahead, Pat.
May I, you were saying about going to City Hall, to the mayor's office. On June 26th, it was a rainy, windy day. And the shelter was getting ready to close, and the families were gathering, and they were worried because it was rainy and windy. That particular day was not a good day. It
mm-hmm.
was really bad. So I was getting ready for work. While I'm getting ready for work, some of the families approached me with some of the single people, and they said, Auntie Pa, what are we going to do? It's still raining, and it's windy. And they had infants. So I said, all right, you know, they're holding their babies. What am I going to do? I'm supposed to be their voice. So I said, okay, wait, let me go talk to staff. So I asked the staff, can you make the call? And the call is usually to Jason
mm-hmm.
to ask if we can do a day at the shelter because of the weather. Well, Jason says the call is made and it comes back. You have until 9:30. Well, 9:30 comes, it's still rain, no stopping. No sign of it stopping. The wind is picking up. So I said, you know what? We can't do it. What am I going to do? So I said, you know what? We're going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you have to do, but we're going to stay. They have nowhere to go. They stay out in the park all day long. They have nothing to cover them from the elements. They said, oh, well, you know what? We can't stay open. So next thing I know, Dallas shows up. Dallas shows up, and he's part of the administration. He says, no, you can't stay. if you stay, we're going to have to call the police.
And this is that big windstorm, that last recent windstorm and rain that we had. Huh?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they kick you out in the rain.
Right. And they said, no, we're not authorized to do that. We cannot do that. It's not in our contract. You have to leave. We will call the police. I said, you know what? I don't know what to do. I cannot put them out in the rain. We're staying. So he says, well, I'm calling the police. I said, go ahead. Do what you have to do. We're staying. I can't put them out. I have a job to do. I have a job to go to. But I can't leave them. I'm supposed to be strong for them. So I said, do what you have to do. Call the police. You can arrest me. Do it. And next thing I know, Darlene shows up, and she's, I'm at my cubicle, putting back out my chairs because I'm staying. She's talking to the families. I notice her talking to them. So I go over there, and she says, you guys can't stay. You have to leave right now. Right now. You have to leave immediately, mm-hmm. like this. She's
yeah.
just short of convulsing. And I said, you know what, Darlene, what is it? How hard is it? You do it all the time. Bad weather days. It's bad weather. We need it today. They have nowhere to go. She said, no, you can't stay here. We're not qualified. We are not able to. We don't have the staff. You have to leave right now. She's jumping up and down, screaming at the top of her lungs, short of convulsing. And I said, Darlene, how hard is it? All you have to do is say, okay, shelter is open. Isn't that easier than calling the police? Oh, no, you will get arrested. You will leave immediately, and you will never be able to return. Not to this shelter. Well, now the families are scared. They can't afford to lose their place. So they turn to me and say, Auntie, that's okay. Don't worry. We'll leave. So now we have wheelchairs going down in the rain, people helping them push the wheelchairs, children in the rain, and she's passing out trash bags, not even big ones, little ones, to protect them from the rain.
Yeah, this is, so for the listeners out there, if you're inclined to donate to this organization, could you put a little note there and ask them for some transparency? But this takes me back my childhood and growing up. People would approach us, and it was always the police. They didn't treat us like human beings, like other would be approached, you know, and sit there and discuss with you. It was always invoking the police, right?
Right.
We would, as kids, just playing in the park. Someone would drive by that don't want it because we were nasty and, you know, dirty little kids and something was wrong with us. So instead of getting out of the car, we'd hear, y'all better stop that. I'm going to call the police on you, you hear? And that's what I mean, that rings in my ears today. And so for me, the compassion, I'm not just soft-hearted. When every solution to the problem down there, everybody tell me, it's the police. She calls the police. That in its alone is enough to be annoying and causing great alarm in anybody that cares. When you're taking, with a four-year-old kid, the allegations of touching, inappropriately touching, so you call the police. Child Protective Service, the police. So what does this tell you? You have a machine there, not giving a darn.
Exactly. I have to say one more thing. During that whole discussion with Darlene, during her jumping up and down and screaming, she says directly, and there were tons of witnesses, I don't care. This is not my problem. Take them to the mall. I don't care. This is not my problem.
Freudian slip.
Why would you say something like that? You run the shelter.
Yeah.
And so I say to her, Darlene, how hard is it? What is easier to say, okay, let's leave the shelter open, or I guess for her it was get out.
Yeah.
That was
Let me say one thing to make sure everybody understands this. I invited Darlene to come on the show more than once, and especially today, she declined. She said that her son was going off to college, and she felt better attending his going away lunch or something, spending quality time with him, that she must decline and wouldn't come on the show. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question.
Hi. I'm also a resident of the shelter, and I've been getting harassed and targeted because I've spoken up many times. And their solution is you speak up. I will call. I've been threatened many times by Jason that I will he will call the police on me. You know,
Dave.
He's never had the guts to do it on me, but I mean, just because I'm speaking up because I see the unfairness and injustices that are going on here at the shelter.
Dave.
Yes.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, great.
And let me walk you back here. We don't any longer say police. We say the police.
Police.
The police, okay? Because that's what it is. Everything. I mean, if the kid walks in past 7:10, and if you object, call the police. I witness it myself. And then when I go there to see this, they even call the police on me.
Oh, yeah.
Told the police. I'm there, and I ask her if I could take pictures later. No, but then I notice on KITV, she allowed them to go in and take pictures. Jason has pictures on his website for city council. But for me, stood in my camera and put her hands in, not Darlene, one of her staff, and then in turn told me, this is confidential. And she tells the policeman to arrest me.
Wow.
Well, that's the tactics they use. And, you know, you would think, here we have a homeless shelter. These are people that are in lots of trauma. I mean, if you've had to live on the streets for any time, like my family has, you know the trauma you go through. I mean, it is scary out there.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you're under... You're in constant threat of somebody holding a knife up to you, or all kinds of demeaning things can happen to you. And then what does not make any sense at all, one of their punishments is putting people out on the streets for 3 days from the protection of a homeless shelter that we go in to get that protection.
Right.
And I find that just totally outrageous.
And if you repeatedly spill your sugar on the table, then you get kicked out for 3 days.
Oh, minor little things, petty little things that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I won't take much of your time because your guests have expressed very well what's going on there. But for example, my little case. Okay, we have a mandatory meeting for all the residents are supposed to come and listen to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Usually Jason and Darlene and them, and then we're supposed to be allowed to have our be able to say our piece. You know what we complaints. Anyway, June 3rd I couldn't, or I guess it was June 4th, I couldn't make it to the meeting. I love to go to those meetings because I'm very outspoken. But that was the day after they changed the bus schedules. I was in Kaneohe. The 55 bus changed from once an hour to once every half hour. Well, I couldn't make it to one bus went by, it was packed like sardines. Another bus went by, it was packed like sardines. So by the time I got there, the meeting was all over. Well, my punishment was I had to go on the helpful list for 5 days. Well, I was not going to... I said, I refuse to... They make you sign this thing. Kind of...
We're coming down on time, Dave. Go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead. We're coming down to close the time, so...
Okay. Here. Anyway, what happened is... I refuse to sign that thing to admit my guilt because there was not in my control to get there. Okay, what happens is I went to Omi and I said, okay, I will do the health of this, but this won't be related to the punishment because that's
mm-hmm.
ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So I got 4 days of the health of this. Then Jesus says, okay, but you're out of here for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the streets, in my wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And that's horrifying enough if you're just a regular person, but in a wheelchair, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
That's the kind of stuff that's going on there. So
right.
I'll leave you guys to.
Hey, thank you, Dave.
You are getting some really good stuff out.
Okay, well, thank you, and we'll do it again. Deborah, real quick.
Thank you.
Yes, if I could just say that on the one end, you have the shelters. You're supposed to be helping the homeless, pushing people back out into the street. And if you don't, you know, and cause trouble, they're threatened, intimidated, and they're going to call the police. Then on the other end, you have the council members putting in laws that criminalize being homeless, and they're trying to push you into the shelter. So basically, the homeless people, they're just sandwiched between these two.
Yeah, I want to just say real quick, there was an incident that happened in the shelter, and I went to the staff, the lead staff, and I notified them to please keep an eye out for this particular person, and I did it confidentially, I thought, and so she would let her staff know, and then her staff went and told that person that I asked them to watch out after. I get word that the staff is warning them that I told. So I go to Darlene and I say, you know what? This is unacceptable. I went in confidentiality on the confidentiality, and your staff turn around and tell the exact person, you know, that could have been my life.
Right.
You know, you never know who you're dealing with.
Right, and they don't appreciate that.
And she just blew it off. Oh, we'll discuss it.
Okay. Real quick, Troy, you have something. We've got 1 minute left.
Well, you know, I'd love for people to email you with the stories of what they've gone through, and maybe it would help me to focus an effort that I'm launching, and we'll talk about that later.
And we're going to be working with Street Beat, and then we're going to post a great bit of their stuff up, and this is a voice. I mean, again, some of you probably will poo-poo this, but it's okay. I just have to harken back to the people in Kaneohe. They got the money, but they don't have the voice. And wouldn't call up, and they've been writing me but won't speak up. I appreciate you guys. You haven't lost your dignity, and you haven't lost your worth. So no matter how many times they call the police on you, stand tall. And we're going to have many more of these discussions, and thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All
right. Appreciate it.
Okay, now I'm going to have...
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.